Hello, everyone. This is Ralph from Palindrome. This show is called Loudly Quiet. Let's talk about the future of blogs for businesses. I'm not sure if my co-host Khalid is going to be joining us, but in the meantime, our guest is already here. Andrea, how are you doing?
I'm doing wonderful, Ralph. I'm so excited to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Did I pronounce your name correctly? Andrea, right?
Yes, that's right.
This show is called Loudly Quiet. Let's talk about the future of blogs for businesses. And me and my co-host Khalid, we've been talking to people from different industries about how they use their websites, blogs, digital marketing, and about what they do in general. So, Andrea, if you don't mind, please go ahead and let our listeners know a bit about yourself and what you do.
Well, my name is Andrea Borcha, and I am the CMO of Dia Creative Marketing Agency. We are a fractional, flexible, and transparent agency, and I do a lot of fractional CMO work.
I had another guest on the show sometime back who did the fractional CMO thing, but I've forgotten what it means. Like, talk us through a little bit about what a fractional CMO does.
That's a great question. Basically, a lot of companies need somebody that can do the high level CMO strategy, but CMOs are expensive. And I have 20 years of marketing experience, and I've just really enjoyed helping businesses with marketing. And about 6 years ago, I realized that there's a lot of startups and small to medium sized businesses that just didn't have the resources to do both high level marketing strategy and tactical marketing execution. That's where fractional CMO comes in. Basically, I get to work with a bunch of different businesses instead of just one and help provide guidance on marketing, build out marketing strategy, do marketing analysis for them. And then the agency is the team that helps with execution. So on the agency side, we then have email, social, web design, web dev, content for SEO. It's so funny actually, because when I started fractional CMOing, I kept coming up with all these great strategies and we were very excited about it. But the companies that I was working with either didn't have the bandwidth, they were too busy, or they just couldn't afford to grow their marketing team. And so we'd come up with these great strategies, but we couldn't do anything. Like, we couldn't execute on them. And so I had to build out the agency to have a trusted set of professionals that could help develop the content with me, help develop out all the pieces. And yeah, it just kind of really gives us a chance to help companies. One other nuance to it, though, that I really like to point out is fractional versus freelance. I think freelance has this negative connotation a little bit about, you're just logging in your hours and you're not really engaged and connected. Whereas fractional, you feel like an extension of their team. So you oftentimes I get an email address from that company. Oftentimes I'm involved in a bunch of different meetings. I just also am running that same offering for a couple other companies.
So where does the word fractional actually come from? Is it like for a fraction of the price or something like that?
That's a great point, actually. Yeah, that is a big reason where it came from. You get someone that's fractional, so part-time, so a fraction of their time is spent with you, but you're also getting them for a fraction of the cost of a CMO. CMOs are very expensive, especially with extensive experience. You try to get a CMO with 20 years experience, you're talking six, seven figures sometimes, depending on the industry. But startups, small to medium-sized businesses, some of the businesses I work with have been around for 20 years, but they're still, $4 to $5 million in revenue, which is considered a small business. And they don't want to pay six figures for a CMO. They've got someone who's like a mid-level marketing manager that's executing on everything that they need. But really what we're looking for is that overall thought, like, are we balanced in all our marketing channels? Are we effectively communicating across all of our channels so it's a consistent brand experience? Are we leveraging channels to support each other? So a lot of companies are missing out on retention marketing right now. They're focusing a lot on acquisition, so using ads to attract new customers, which is very expensive and it's getting more expensive right now. But you've attracted all this customer, and then you don't spend any time or effort getting them to come back, which is actually significantly cheaper and increases the lifetime value of each customer. So just kind of thinking through all these different things for them, but doing it on a part-time basis. And I'll tell you one other little secret about being a fractional CMO that I really love is because I get to work with all these different businesses, we can see and learn and test things in different industries across different clients of mine, and you actually learn faster and can adapt quicker than a larger organization that has just one CMO that's working within that narrow niche, because we can experiment across industries and test and grow.
Yeah, like I had a few points that I wanted to bring up from all the stuff you said just now. One about like the CMO role, I feel in some organizations might not be seen as maybe as important as the CEO role, for example, right? And like they might have their CTO, CEO, and you know, maybe even their COO, right? And because maybe they feel that operations and you know, management and these other things are more important, but then when it comes to marketing, they neglect, right? And then they don't even like you said, they might just have like a middle marketing manager, right, or someone like that. And I mean, particularly in the startup space, a lot of them are built with those teams, like from this with those people from the start, right? And a lot of them are given equity, right? So they have stake in the business.
Yep.
Do you do that as well? That's one question. I mean, do you take equity? That's one question. The other one, let me try to remember. You were talking about acquisition versus retention, right? Mm-hmm. Particularly post iOS 14, right? Like with all the tracking and privacy issues and costs of ads going up, like you said, right? They've got more expensive and I think less effective as well paid, right? And maybe let's move to that question next. Talk us through a little bit about how you work with your clients. You take equity and you know, do you take a stake in the companies that you work with?
That's a great question. So I do work on equity for certain organizations. Equity is such a tricky conversation, and it's honestly a tricky conversation even if you're going to go full time for a company. I think there's the statistic I like to remember is what 80% of startups fail, but of course no one actually thinks their startup is the one that's going to fail. And so when you're considering that equity arrangement, you are taking it. There's a risk, exactly. I mean, you're taking equity in the place of actual cash in bank. And so if you worked 100% on equity and everything fell apart, or every single startup you worked for fell, like you basically worked for free. If you, that being said, what I know a lot of other fractional people do, because it's not just fractional CMO, I know fractional CEOs, COOs, CSOs, chief customer, chief sales, CIOs, tech. There's a bunch of different professionals moving in this direction. But you see, the challenge is if you take equity, all of their strategies is to take equity in as many different companies as possible, because all you need is one to hit. So out of 10, if one hits big, you're like, it's okay that I worked for free for the other 9. It was taking a gamble. I like to look at it from a different perspective, whereas is actually, especially coming from marketing, is analyzing the product market fit, analyzing whether or not there's enough leeway in the company to execute effectively on the marketing tactics we want to do. Traditionally in like corporate environments, when they start having layoffs, marketing is actually usually the first to go, because it feels more of like a soft brand play. But what marketing does is it fills in the gaps around sales and becomes the foundational element for every single way that you interact with your customer, which is actually super critical. And knowing if I can pull that off effectively informs my decision on whether or not I'll take equity in replacement of pay. But at the end of the day, it all starts with the same, like this is what the pay is, and this is how we're going to value equity in replacement of pay. So it's dollar for dollar. But that's the trick too, is how these companies evaluate their equity. You know, you definitely have companies sometimes that are like, we're going to be a $50 million company. It's like, yeah, but you're not today. So.
Yeah, I think you brought up another interesting point that I want to get to as well. But let's circle back to what you were talking about earlier As I mentioned, post iOS 14, and with all the privacy and tracking issues and cost of acquisition going up, and you were talking about retention, right? And really getting that mid funnel in, right? I feel that, and going back to what you said as well about product market fit, I think a lot of retention actually comes from the product itself. For example, right, you have some products that have retention built into them, right? Like let's say, for example, the Razer and Blade model, right? If you buy a certain Razer, or even like the PlayStation, I think PlayStation, like I think they took like a loss or break even on the machine, right? Because they were expecting people to buy the games. Once you have the machine, what are you going to do with it, right?
Yeah.
So and the Razer and Blade, once you get the Razers, right, it's like an every month Blade kind of thing, right? So I think retention really is built into the product. If you have to force customers to come back, then it's difficult. Any thoughts on that?
100%, and I think that if you look at 5-10 years ago, I feel like we were more in the like cowboy marketing style where everything was about aggressive growth on Facebook and Instagram ads, like everything that their companies built entirely on Facebook ads before the iOS update, just nonstop going crazy, just blowing money on one platform. And I was raising the red flag back then because I always get, I mean, yes, you should perfect one channel when you start a business because that's how you build the financial foundation so that you can build out other channels. But once you get past a certain point, you want to start diversifying because that channel could fall apart and then your entire business collapses, everything that you've gotten to. And I think that iOS update was that slap in the face, like you were saying, that woke everyone up to like, wait, we can't just rely on this acquisition. And now all of a sudden you're seeing a lot more businesses start with subscription. You saw the rise of subscription boxes in the last few years because everybody wants this retention. They just want to know that customers are coming back and they're realizing how expensive it is to get one customer. I mean, cost per acquisition right now is 3x what it was 18 months ago for most businesses, even if they are starting to perfect and their marketing messaging and really starting to get or test out these new platforms. So yeah, I think retention is the smarter way to go. I'm disappointed it wasn't more of a focus, but I agree with you right now. It's a lot more of a focus for businesses. Acquisition has just gotten way too expensive. And there's something that investors really like understanding subscription, that customers come back, and especially if you've got a good retention rate with that subscription, your churn rate is really low. That feels like a very, very investable business instead of versus what they would have invested in 3-4 years ago, which would have been like, oh, well, look, we're acquiring new customers, 25% growth month over month. Because I think even with companies like Netflix now, they're starting to see that that bottoms out at some point. At some, you can't acquire forever. At some point, you just need to actually keep the customers you've bothered to get through the door.
I want to go back to what you spoke about. Like during a downturn, we might be heading towards a downturn. And you were mentioning how marketing people seem to be the first to go, right? And how people might see it as like, like a nice to have and all that, but not really understanding how marketing fits in with sales. Because if you talk about just sales, right, people might have this idea of sales being this outbound, door-to-door, cold call kind of thing, right? Not really understanding the possibilities and the opportunities that the internet brings, like with inbound, like information and inbound and MQL, right? Marketing qualified leads, right? Talk us through a little bit of your experience seeing these things happen, like considering that we might be heading towards a downturn.
Yeah, that's a great question. With a recession, everyone does start tightening their belts. And there are quite a few stories of doing some proper assessments. And one of the things I do as a fractional CMO, unfortunately, is help companies slim down their teams when they've gotten too big or their revenues dropped and we then need to adjust their team. And what I found is rather than taking it department by department, which is what a lot of companies do, they just kind of think through like, well, who's spending and who's actually influencing the bottom line. And for a long time, their marketing struggled on how it influenced the bottom line. If you're doing a pure revenue play, then yeah, marketing's pretty easy to understand the value of. But if you're doing any sort of brand awareness, if you're doing any sort of support for product, like what copy you're putting on packaging, sales assets, overall messaging and tone, corporate communications in case of crises, like all of that falls under marketing. And so I think a lot of that's taken for granted at first. But I actually, especially if you're a smaller business, I feel like the real assessment is to take a step back and look at what, if you were going to start this business over today, given the scope, or if you were to buy this business exactly as it is, the business you're running, buy it today, who would you need? What features, you know, what possibilities would you need in this organization? And that's when you'd go through, because then it becomes a lot less vague. You don't necessarily need someone in marketing. You need someone that's going to manage your paid ads, someone that's going to write your email company, someone that's going to design. And those three might be the same person. They might not be, but at least then you have a clear assessment of needs. And then you can figure out who fits in where based in your existing team. There's one exercise I like doing called Genius Zones, where you make everybody on the team write out what their job tasks are. And this list should not be more than 10 to 15 things, like absolutely no more than that. So really just keep it high level. Like, I take notes during meetings. I analyze our ads to figure out what creative is performing, whatever that is. And then you create this grid where on the left-hand side, you have loves to do versus hates to do. So you have a scale, and on the top of the grid, you have, so it's basically this matrix. On the top, you have not very skilled at and very, very skilled at. So essentially what you do is when you have things that you're very, very skilled at and you love to do, that's your genius zone. And you want to just try to optimize the team so everybody is in their genius zone. And if you love to do something, but you're not very skilled at it yet, that's fine. Put in money. That justifies putting in the money for training to get that person skilled, because they're going to want to keep doing that. Anything that you don't like doing, you're just not going to be, you know, particularly wanting to spend a lot of time there. You're probably not going to do your best work. And when you have a slimmer team, unfortunately, like, that's really where you want to be. So I just think moving away from broad assessments of who needs to be on the team or what the teams need to be or the departments you need, and going more into actual tactical and strategic gaps you have in the business and figuring out who fits in those is the stronger way to go.
That goes back to what you were talking about earlier as well. Like, working with different companies and in different industries actually lets you like learn things to apply in other places, and you might get ideas or tactics or strategies that you didn't think about without having gone to the other when you didn't go into those other industries, you know. So there are some companies I think that actually like move their people around into different departments so that they get a feel, at least within the organization, right? Like working in different departments and bringing sort of like fresh points of view or different skill sets, and then coming back to their original workplaces, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. I think that's kind of what the Great Recession is supposed to be helping people figure out a bit.
The Great Resignation.
Thank you. The Great Resignation. Right. Ah, that was a total slip. I've got recession on the brain. So that's a good catch. Yes.
Hey, thinking a bit too much about it, huh?
I know. Every client is like, we're going into a recession. I'm like, oh, so it's on the head. But yes, no, the Great Resignation is supposed to resolve a lot of that. It's supposed to allow people to really follow what they enjoy doing. I think that the biggest challenge, and when I talk to new graduates and they're asking for my advice, I think the challenge for them in particular, and this could be true later on if you're looking at career changes, is the jobs that you're probably going to have in your career probably don't even exist when you graduate, you know? And I think there's a lot of jobs that people don't know somebody does. And I don't know that college prepares you very well in that sense for that. And I think it's kind of the same thing figuring out with the Great Resignation is people are starting to discover that there's certain types of jobs that exist that they actually really, really love that they didn't even consider. But the only way to really find them is to go work for enough companies to find it, to discover it, you know, and look through enough different job postings to even understand this exists. But same thing, go back to your assessment, like what do you love doing? What do you really want to be spending your time doing? And if you're in more of a generalist role, but you really, really love email, you should be switching over to email, because there are plenty of companies that run with email specialists. And even email breaks down even further, because you've got your email designer, email copywriter, email strategist that goes
Noah Kagan from AppSumo, he built his whole business basically, I think, on email. Daily deals kind of thing, right?
Yep, exactly. Yeah, it's such a strong channel. And I think just everyone just needs to figure out like what it is they actually like. And with my team, it's a lot of consistent assessment, you know, because I do have people that are generalists. They just want to play in every field, but they won't go deep in any channel. And then you've got other people that just like, I don't care about other channels. Sure, I'll understand how we work together, but I just want to really like excel and go deep in this one channel. And you need both to make a team really work well, I think.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. Brings back, sorry, can you guys hear me?
Yeah, welcome to the conversation.
Yep.
Right, sorry, connection problems and my son is running around half naked, sorry. Anyway, the not sure if you know the author of a book that basically he speaks about how generalists can win in some ways in a world that prioritizes specialization. So I think that what you just said kind of speaks to the to his notion where we need to work together when it comes to specialists who dive deep into specific skill sets and generalists who touch base on all types of different verticals, but they know how to connect the dots and they know how to make things work holistically. Yeah, so the input, add that in.
Andrea, maybe you can take us through a little bit of how you work with new clients, like what do you do first? Did you start with the strategic and move on to the tactical? How's it work?
That's a great question. I really like starting strategic. It's funny because when I typically I've noticed a lot of agencies in that first meeting when you're like just meeting them, like, okay, you got a lead. And they're like, all right, yeah, I've assessed your website. I kind of checked you out. Like, you're worth talking to. I feel like their first pitch meeting is very much them pitching themselves. My first pitch meeting with any potential client is me asking them a ton of questions. it's a completely different philosophy, because for me, your business is your own. You know it better than I do, obviously. Like I have my expertise, but I don't know where my expertise fits in with your business until I really, really understand your business. So I just start asking questions. I really want to understand what you've tried in the past. Who is your target market? Are you hitting them? Are you hitting a different market that you didn't mean to hit? Where is the biggest impact to your business so that we can focus on that? Are you effectively hitting every touch point that you should be with your customer based on who they are? I have a lot of clients that I'll talk to and they're trying to hit every single social media channel. And I'm like, you are a B2B company that sells packaging supplies. Like maybe you don't need to be on every single social platform because it's a waste of your time. And I don't know that people are going to care unless that's where your brand wants to be, right? So my whole process is understanding their business, after these lists of questions, I go back to the team and we do an in-depth analysis of their organization, their website, their competitors, the marketplace, the search trends, just to really understand how they fit in the general marketplace. And we come back and give them some ideas. They're welcome to use them for free. Oftentimes we include free social.
Do you use Porter's Five Forces or Business Model Canvas at all, these kind of tools?
I like to jump around tools. So I go back to this. I guess I like to just try a bunch of things. Right now I've been using a lot of SEMrush to understand the marketplace. But yeah, I've tested those out. I like them. I tend to try out at least one new platform every month, especially since new ones come out. And I'm definitely like deep into the ad series of new platforms, because my Instagram is just full of nothing but like, this is the new platform that's going to improve your Facebook ads, or this is the new platform that's going to optimize your retention. So yeah.
I was just thinking as you were speaking, I was just thinking of like possible hybrid role, right, between the CFO and the CMO, right? Hear me out. Because like, if you look at McKinsey, for example, right, he was a finance guy, okay? Buffett, you know Warren Buffett, right?
Yeah, definitely.
He basically, like, from what I know, he just sits around all day and reads the books of companies, right? You can get a lot from the books, right? And really understanding what's happening with the business through numbers instead of just through understanding in a very marketing-y kind of way, you know, like through looking at TikTok or channels and all that, right? First of all, like, beginning with the books, with the accounts of the company. I think that might be like you said, right? Some roles that people might go into do not even exist. I don't think this hybrid CFO CMO role exists, but I think this there might be something there. Yeah, you know, there's some similarity there, you know.
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah, I think back to the Great Resignation and where everybody is kind of moving, it does feel that people are almost inventing their own jobs at this point. So this is where Fractional came from. I know I'm not the first, I'm definitely not going to be the last, but what's super cool is once you kind of get into this subculture of Fractional, is I'm meeting a lot of people that are building out their perfect lives with some sort of conglomeration of a couple different business models. And I think it's just something that you saw previously, but not as common. But now I think, especially with millennials and younger, they're just redefining how they want their lives to be. And it's interesting. There are people that are Instagram celebrities that are also providing consulting services and also launching their own product line. So they're basically running three businesses at the same time, which is something you previously saw from like celebrities like Jessica Alba with The Honest Company. And now you're seeing from, you know, random Instagram stars and TikTok stars.
Gwyneth Paltrow started something from her from her kitchen table, I think. Like it's called Gloop, if I'm not mistaken. It started off as a newsletter, apparently. So
Goop, right?
Yeah.
Goop's huge now. She's got such a following.
Yeah, it's more for women, so I don't really follow that one. But yeah, she started off with email, and apparently it was an email newsletter. So she would like go around for her acting, right? She would like live like in one city for like 6 months to shoot and all that, right? And like her friends would apparently ask her, hey, you know, where are some of the best places to eat in Barcelona, da da da, and she would like write an email for them, for her friends. So this is an example of find products for your customers instead of finding customers for your products. Right, you start off with a group of people first, you know.
Yeah, well, and honestly, that's true of other businesses as well. And it's so funny how many times I've gone into a business and the very first thing I need to do is talk to their head of customer service, who's been left out of every marketing and sales conversation for years, and it blows my mind because I was like, this is the person and this team are actively talking to your customers. they're the only ones that have the immediate instant pulse. No surveys, no nothing. They'll tell you, hey, we got a surge in complaints 1 week because you changed the text from blue to red and now they can't read it. It's like, that's amazing feedback that's getting lost right now because people aren't listening to their customers. So I 100% love that. Like, you should be talking to your customers. The customers exist out there. There's pain points they have. Let's solve their problems. And we're successful and they're happy because we solved their problem.
And one example, going back to what I was talking about with like really understanding the business in terms of the numbers and in order to apply, in order to inform your marketing, there was this guy, Edward Bernays. I don't know if you've heard of him. He's known as the father of modern PR. And he had, I think, Lucky Strike at one point, long time ago. Like they got to him and said, look, we're running out of customers. We need to attract women to smoke, right? So, yeah. so he went about making like green fashionable. I think the color of the box was green. So he took a series of steps, right? First was making green fashionable, right? So he like worked with like fashion shows in Paris and whatnot to make green fashionable. And so this actually comes, it's like like releasing an untapped market, right? Instead of like, if they were just looking at their normal marketing data, it's like find more men, right? But through really understanding the business deep inside, right? Find more women, right? See, get more women to smoke. Anyway, that's just a little segue from your earlier point, but we're running out of time. Andrea, before the session ends, if you don't mind, please go ahead and let our listeners know your web URL where they can find out more about you.
Sure, definitely. It's Dia Creative, so D as in Delta, IA creative.com, DIA CREATIVE.com. And that has all of the marketing agency stuff, but it's also a great way to contact me. And I honestly, like, I love marketing conversations like these. So super exciting to be here and nerd out on marketing. If anyone ever wants to talk marketing, just reach out, like, regardless of if you're a business owner or anything. Like, I just love to do stuff like this. So
right. And for like just like maybe 2 minutes or a minute and a half, talk us through a little bit about how you use content, you know, blog marketing, SEO. You mentioned SEM Rush earlier, right? I noticed that you have a blog at the Dia Creative website. So who writes for it? You know, stuff like that, for like a minute and a half. Go.
Well, blog is huge right now, and I think people haven't realized it. What I've noticed in the last year and a half since the iOS update, Facebook's algorithm just fell apart, but Google's algorithm got a lot better in the last 18 months. I mean, if you look at the history of SEO, it used to take, you know, they'd promise maybe 6 to 9 months to see some sort of effect from writing your blog posts. And now I'm seeing some blog posts ranking.
I noticed that too. Yeah. They've been ranking faster, really fast, right?
Really fast, super fast. And I think their filter's gotten a lot better about junk content because most of my clients, we actually get experts to write their content. So if they're a health and wellness company, we get nutritionists writing their content, or we get dental hygienists, or we get, estheticians to write about facial creams. Like, we get real people that know their stuff to write really good content, and that explodes. That like instantly ranks almost on Google. It's incredible. So I'm trying to do the same thing with our blog, is going deep on marketing, having more of these in-depth marketing conversations, and trying to not stay as much on the surface, because I think there's a lot of surface, right? If you want marketing 101, there's 1,000 people that have done it before me. You can go watch them. You know, if you want to get a little deeper on what's happening today, that's the content I like to write. And I think that's what ranks really well. To be fair, we also look at search trends to see what questions people have, but that goes back to your previous question about customer. What does the customer want to hear? At the end, a blog is still selling content, even if it's for free, to people, and that validates their trust in you and builds a relationship that you can then capitalize on later. So 100%, I think blog is huge for any sort of business. You need to be putting good content out there.
That was Andrea from DiaCreative.com. Andrea, I want to thank you so much for being on the show. I look forward to having you again on the show sometime.
Yeah, absolutely. This was super fun. Have a great day, both.